Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast about Marvel, the MCU, and right now, X-Men 97. I'm Alex.
There it is. Yeah, slightly off. Pete's had a long weekend. I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about the latest episode of X-Men 97, Tolerance is Extinction, Part 1. Part 1 of the three-part finale of Season 1 of X-Men 97. If you haven't watched it on Disney+, go watch it. Big stuff goes down here as Bastion, and I'm going to give some recap now, so this is where we get into the spoilers.
Wait, sorry. Did we change the format? Is this new?
This is new. I figured we could do the recap now instead of immediately jumping into talking about the opening credits of the Marvel.
Can we talk about the opening credits?
No, I have some notes about
Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to do the recap. Then we talk about the Marvel flip. Then we open it up for Q&A.
And then go back to the Marvel flip.
Yeah, and then we talk
about... That sounds great.
Go to a little section I like to call Slipping in These Jeans, right?
Whoa.
I think that's the name of this podcast? Yeah. I'm going to uncork a bottle of wine, a classic 97.
Oh, look at you guys.
Well, anyway, on this episode, Bastion has activated his Prime Sentinels based on the actions of the X-Men of the previous episode. Everything goes horribly wrong for pretty much every one of our characters this week. The X-Mansion gets burned down. We get a kick-ass action sequence with Wolverine and Nightcrawler fighting back to try to save and protect Rogue, who basically sleeps her way through this entire episode.
Oh, man. Like, nothing like some good sleeping.
When you need a nap,
That is 100%
a stress nap. She has had a stressful couple of days. She's like, I'm just going to curl up like the little kitty I am.
Maybe she's had too much sugar and she's having a little.
Meanwhile, we get Roberto and Jubilee still dealing with his mom, who, per the show, has a complicated reaction to Roberto's coming out that I thought was very nuanced and well done. At the same time, this is upsetting. Also, Magneto has been captured by Bastion. He talks to Val Kooper a bunch, who ultimately frees him, says Magneto was right. And Magneto, at the end of the episode,
it's just in underwear a lot. You know what I mean?
Does a classic reversing of the poles move, taking down all of the Sentinels, EMPing the entire world and declaring war on humanity. And just at that moment, Professor Xavier crashes into the burned remains of the X-Mansion and is like, hope I'm not too late. And everybody watching is like, you are.
Yeah.
And then he says, to me, my X-Men, and he calls on four specific X-Men. There you go. Lots of other things, of course, going on in this very, very big episode. But let's get into it. Let's talk about the Marvel flip. Pete, it was the same this time. Take it away.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's nice to have some consistency in your life. You know what I mean? Just hearing the music, bringing you back. It's just a lovely thing.
Yes. Wow. The shortest section ever. Okay. Let's open it up for Q&A.
Nice. Well, let's talk a little bit while we're talking opening creds.
Let's bring it back to the creds.
You know, more and more, I feel like watching the first, you know, handful of episodes, I was like, oh, look at these fun little things they're showing us, little like, oh, the Easter eggs. But what they were doing is telling us the whole story in short. And that leads us to what we were talking about last episode, the Apocalypse and Cable are key factors here in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So, it's a little early to turn to our vision board, right, Alex?
But I don't skip the last section.
Yeah, like, we're still in Q&A, and so far there have been neither Q's nor A's.
I'm joking, but I do think that having Apocalypse in such a prominent space in something that has become really the window into the future of this season just makes me think that Cable is – and then we go to Cable as the first moment.
When you say Apocalypse, do you mean Sinister?
No, Cable is shooting Apocalypse in the first little vignette in the opening credits, and Sinister
I apologize.
Yeah, how dare you?
By the way, while we're staying on the opening credits here, there's been a lot of discussion I've seen online about something we've talked about here on the podcast, which is Worf's powers on this series and the fact that, like, you know, he could turn into Quicksilver. He could turn into magic. I'm blanking on
Juggernaut.
Juggernaut, exactly. It seemed to have those powers. There is a theory, which I don't think is too far-fetched, that Sinister has messed with Morph in some way, and that's what we're getting these opening credits, to give him powers that are beyond shape-shifting so he can actually
beyond sight.
beyond sight, beyond dreams. I don't know. Anyway, I'm not quite sure what we're doing here, but yeah, there might be something to that, like them ending with that, with Sinister having some reveal with Morph at the end of the season. I guess we'll see. But to your point, yes, they've been laying in all this stuff all along.
And the only other one I would call out is the moment where we see Bishop in that little flash, and what's in upon closer inspection looks like the alt future Storm and Wolverine. Mm-hmm. So I think that's maybe making me think that in this last, perhaps the last episode, we are going to jump to Cable's time and have Apocalypse be set up as a future villain or maybe the overarching villain of this whole season.
Well, I think that could lead us to the thing that I completely skipped over the recap, which is we get a Summers family road trip that happens in this episode where Cable is hanging out with Jean Grey and Scott Summers. They have a great family dynamic through this whole thing. A lot of it is about Scott dealing with the fact that, like, he gave his baby up to the future, the worst possible thing happened. And also Jean, as we find out, has the memories of Madeline Pryor given to her moments before she died. So she has feelings towards Cable. I really liked all this stuff. I thought this was really well done. That thing where the whole thing with, like, the X-Jet blowing up and then driving out of the car.
Before we get into Fast and the Furious, let's back up the fucking truck. So after the credits.
Let's start with the opening credits, the Marvel
Sorry, Pete, I just want to ask. You always say back up the truck. Has it always been a fucking truck? Because I'm just wondering, is that something that I can just, call when I, an Uber, the fucking truck?
Hey, listen. All I'm saying is
we get bang bus, I believe.
Oh, don't go there. So after the open credits, you get Scott, hanging out with Jean, and he's just complaining. He's just fucking bitching about, oh, my son won't talk to me. Oh.
I think you need to watch this with new eyes, because you're adding your hatred of Cyclops to this episode that isn't about
him.
Then
he says the crazy – if you would let me finish, then we could move on. And then he says the craziest shit, which is Professor X is the greatest father of all time. And I just don't know –
But if you're coming at this from a comic reader's point of view, where both of those characters have done bad things and have sort of fallen from grace. In the cartoon, that has barely happened. There's little shades of that, maybe, but this has been
okay.
They are not that way.
Justin, listen. You're a father, Alex. You're a father. If you went to space and
you're a motherfucker.
If you just went to space and ditched your family, would you still think you have a pretty cool dad, or what were your thoughts on that?
What if your dad came to you and was like, "Hey guys, I'm in love with a bird lady. I gotta go chase your dad."
Haircut like you've never seen. I mean, the hold on the triangle is just—it's magnificent,
it's beautiful. Think of the hairspray. As we know, the ozone layer is going to be saved.
You don't know it's hairspray. It could be fish gel. You have no idea what's holding that triangle under perfect perfection.
I think we're going to find out by the end of the season.
I hope so.
Alex, can you fix this mess?
Probably not. But I do agree with you that they are No, wrong person.
Not you.
That they are laying in things textually here. Because I will say, Pete, I clocked the same thing of really? Professor Xavier is the best father ever? All right.
Yeah, that's a hell of a thing to say.
Justin, I know you're not quite there yet in your rewatch of X-Men 97, but as far as I know, the X-Men are kind of aware that Xavier left to go be healed by the Shi'ar. So there's not that he isn't lying to them. He hasn't he wasn't about to die and then he snuck out to the Shi'ar and he's like, hey, or anything. That's something that they're all aware of and know. And if we got those details wrong, by the way, about the cartoon show, the original one, fine, same point still stands. This is not Xavier screwing.
I'm not even, I'm just talking about the cartoon. Charles rolls around with a lot of promises that he's going to help people out, doesn't do a lot of that. There's so much inward fighting. How do you look at this X-Men team and say, man, that guy, they're all led by somebody who is clearly a great father? You got to be fucking kidding me, man.
Are you saying this show might be about a father that's letting down the people in his charge? A theme that I've never encountered in popular culture, I guess.
All I'm saying is a crazy statement. It's a fucking crazy statement.
No, but they are laying in the relationship here because we have not seen Scott and Xavier together. That is what we're heading towards. And like we've been talking about on the podcast almost week by week, when Xavier returns, regardless of what Scott is saying in this episode, it is going to be hard on him. It is going to make things complicated for him and dramatic.
Well, and I think this season, I think I was saying this before, like, it's all about the squeeze on Cyclops. So you had the interview where he was popping off. And I think, to your point, Pete, that statement of Xavier being the best father is weird. But keep in mind, it's coming from a man who, given no options, sent his son to the future. He had no choice. Bishop was like, Cable was like, yeah, Bishop vanished immediately. Like, that's a bad babysitter, I'll tell you that much. And now he's talking about Professor X, the father that also sort of abandoned him because he had to go do something that was beyond his circumstances. So it's all about the squeeze on Cyclops, and you can hate him or for whatever reason you want to, but the show isn't telling you to hate him. It's showing you that he's under immense pressure and maybe hitting a breaking point alongside a lot of the other
X-Men. Is that anything
X-Men.
You could relate to, Pete, or no?
I get it. Cyclops is flawed. He's a flawed leader, and gosh, he's trying his best. I'm just saying he sucks as he's doing it, all right? I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
They all suck, though. That's kind of like, that's the point of
I don't think
X-Men.
They all suck.
They do. They're all flawed. They all push.
They all make mistakes.
Hard. They all make mistakes.
Yeah,
exactly.
They all make mistakes.
Yeah.
Like, for instance,
love saying the squeeze. What kind of squeeze. Juice you drinking?
Squeeze grapes. Could have been
squeeze
around.
Grapes.
They're squeezed by feet. Their feet squeezed.
Oh man.
Just so you know, unlike like Madeline Pryor, when I die, I plan on pushing my memories toward one of you two. Which one of you would like them?
Ooh, Pete Wood? Really?
Wow, great. What a super volunteer. You just made a huge mistake, Pete.
Or maybe the greatest. I get to live two lives.
You have to be JT squeeze.
I want to jump onto something else that I feel like maybe we can all agree on or at least talk about in a reasonable manner. So we get some big, they're not MCU connections, but MCU tangential things in this
episode. Tons of cameos in this episode.
Hold on. I wanted to talk about the Cable time travel thing because we get established the rules of time travel here, very similar to how they've been established in the MCU. They talk about the mystics of Kamar-Taj, talking about fixed points in time.
Yeah, hard time.
If you want to call them canon events, if you want to call them fixed points, etc. It's something that they touched on in the MCU. They touched on the Spider-Verse movies, etc. Beau DeMeo, the former showrunner of X-Men 97, who was still fired for reasons that we don't know about, has been online offering a lot of Easter eggs and explanation. He said specifically on that stuff, that does not mean this is a branch on the MCU timeline tree. It just means that it's easy shared language, that rather than having to reinvent time travel and explain it to people, using the shorthand that Marvel viewers already understand makes it easier to get forward and move to the interesting stuff of the episode, which I like that explanation.
I agree. And I think the biggest factor to look at is right off the jump, Cable's outside shooting bottles.
Oh, never a good
sign. He's affecting
sign.
Any bottles that might play a larger part in the MCU going forward?
That's called the bottle fly. The bottle fly effect.
If one of those bottles flies off and hits a mailman who's delivering a very important letter or something.
I would love to see that. With all the cameos in the episode, Willie Lumpkin gets his neck sliced. By a
loose Cable bottle.
Do we want to talk about the cameos while we're staying on that since Pete brought it up? We get a ton of them in this episode. First of all, in Cable's explanation of what he weirdly describes as a utopian future, which I did not understand the phrasing on that.
Well, agree. And this is sort of the crux of the episode in a way where he's saying like this future. And he calls it a utopia for everyone, right?
I think so. Like, we get to see – it's confusing because –
I thought it was a shout-out to the comics.
Which comics? The X-Men comics?
No, the utopia – wasn't there – I thought there was an X-Men utopia event. I remember seeing it on a bunch of
comics. There might have been, potentially. Yeah.
The word utopia gets thrown around a lot in everything. So.
Yes, but you might be right, Pete. I honestly don't remember that, but could be. I think, though, just to lay it out, he says excuse me, there's 300 years of war with Bastion and the Prime Sentinels. And at the end, what we see certainly looks like mutants. Human. Okay. All right. Yes. There you go.
It had that kind of like X in the middle of the O of the Utopia. You don't remember that?
I do not, but I believe you.
2009.
This is great. Everybody has access to the internet. They have the 300 years of war, and to get to it, then we get to see humans and mutants and robots all working together. We don't really get a lot of perspective on the mutants, though we do see some of them sort of working on a chain gang type line. So it's confusing that it describes it with a utopia. What it seems like, mutants are definitely the lesser caste here. We see Polaris. We see Rachel Summers, my nerd brain. I don't know about you guys, but we saw Rachel Summers. She has the hound markings on her face. And I was like, that's a different future. That happens in a different apocalypse. Well, I'm confused.
But and to you, I agree. Like, and, you know, there's intentionality in all of this stuff. So it's like there's a lot of like what. We have to see a second breadcrumb to know what the point of all that is.
Yeah, I mean,
we are going to see a series of different dystopias.
We get Doom, we get Zemo, we get fucking Nimrod.
You're just
Nimrod.
Jumping all over the place. Yes, we're talking
about
You're
talking about cameos.
Okay, you wanted to move on.
Are we not?
No, it's fine. It's fine. We were just talking about the future utopia, and then that's a different scene. We get to see Bastion is talking to OZT, Operation Zero Tolerance. We find out, as Pete mentioned, Doob is in there. Baron Zemo is in there. Unnamed Chinese OZT operative is in there, who Bo DeMeo also was like, nope, that's nobody. That was just kind of to show regular humans are involved in this, as well as Dr. Doom and Baron Zemo. Later on in the episode, we get to see Silver Samurai. We get to see Omega Red. And we get to see Spider-Man, who is, in fact, the Spider-Man from the 1994 animated Spider-Man series. Of course, he doesn't say anything. The voice actor
it
for that Spider-Man.
It almost seems like he's gonna.
Yeah, but you can't tell with the mask. The voice actor was like, yep, haven't heard anything about that. Would love to do Spider-Man 98. Let's get it going. So we'll see, I guess.
Nice. Cool.
Good. I loved all of that stuff. I loved seeing just like fleshing out the world of, we already talked about Juggernaut, Pete. You're all over the place. The whole Marvel universe of it all. I'll throw out a maybe bold statement here, but seeing this stuff gave me a thrill in a way. Seeing characters interact in the actual Marvel comics, and even the MCU, has not done in years at this point.
Well, you know why? Because I was thinking about this too.
We also got to see Storm at the end.
That's that not a cameo. That's not a cameo, Pete. She's a cast member on the show.
I'm just having some fun, Justin. I was just having some fun. I wanted him to get angry. Go ahead, Justin.
You got him. You got him. Yeah. Well, and we also saw the sign in Bastion's bedroom that said Stark Expo. So
come on.
But what I was going to say is the reason why I think it works here is because it's such a lighter touch. It's like a quick montage where there isn't. I feel like it's in so many other things when we land on a cameo like this, it's like huge, like crash zoom reveal. Then we have so much exposition we have to get to, and it just weighs down the cameos a bit. And the way that they can do it here, like they did in the animated series throughout the run, there's Punisher appeared in a video game in a season one episode.
Hell yeah. Come on.
That's an insane thing to do. But it's just such a lighter touch that I think it works in a buoying of the story as opposed to a distracting story.
Well, it works in the same way, to agree with you on this, I think it works in the same way as the Captain America appearance in the previous episode, where it's supporting the X-Men, not the other way around. Like a lot of these cameos, to call something out, I like the Marvels, but the Valkyrie cameo where she hops in and they literally pause for applause from the audience makes me hate that, even though I like Valkyrie, because I'm like, come on, this is about these other characters. What are we doing here? Just bring her in, have her do her thing, have that be cool and leave. And that's exactly what happens on this show. So good stuff.
Do we think, now we get a lot of Beast and Trish here.
Are they the, yeah.
Are they the Ross and Rachel of X-Men 97?
Wow.
I mean, they're definitely the Rachel and Joey of X-Men 97.
Wow. Interesting twist. Yeah. Why do you make that distinction?
Because nobody wants them to be together. Nobody's shipping those two.
They're not. Her whole purpose, it feels like, the whole purpose of this romance was to have that turn where she turns out to be a prime sentinel.
When she sets down coffee and then turns into an evil robot.
I know they're animated, but there's no heat there. There is like nothing going on between these characters.
She's strange.
Yes.
It was weird to see her again and letting her in the lab. I was like, what is happening? Like,
it was all worth it because we got the number one line from the X-Men universe, "Oh, my stars and garters."
We did get that.
I love when people are like, "Oh, my garters." And then he throws stars in there. Killer. I stood up and applauded in front of my laptop.
No, you did not.
In front of my laptop. That's what I did.
Nice little note about the Trish Tilby thing, just from the person who read all of Bo DiMeo's tweets. Trish Tilby apparently has been a prime sentinel this entire time, and when she was doing all of those interviews and bothering Cyclops and everybody else, that was actually because of Bastion, so that he could get information on everybody while he was off doing other things. So that's kind of a neat little texture thing there.
That's not how journalism works.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of is, actually.
He's like, Bastion's like her editor, kind of, is what's happening.
Yeah, her gene editor.
Nope. Yeah. Nobody likes editors.
I did that. No, I mean, I've worked professionally as a journalist, and the first thing that they do is they inject you with a techno-organic virus.
Yeah, you remember Pete when Alex showed up and he had a big, long robot purple tongue that he just kept slashing us with?
Yeah,
he's on the case. Ace reporter with his robo tongue.
Mr. Cyclops, why are you so bad? First question.
Don't take the bait, Scott. Oh, you did?
Scott, you folded.
Let's get into a little speculation here while we're talking about the Prime Moles? Sentinels. No, about the Prime Sentinels. There are so many characters that get turned into Prime Sentinels here. The one that I guess ostensibly we're supposed to care about the most is Trish Tilby, but we get like the dudes in the opening credits are turned into Prime Sentinels. Bastion's mom, etc. Oh,
Bastion's mom. Obviously, come on.
Classic character, Bastion's mom. Yeah. They all get shut down by Magneto. Is there a out here? Are they going to be able to cure these people, or are they all
dead?
Dead, yeah.
Well, I think they died when they turned into evil robots, didn't they? Because it seemed like they were. No?
No, no. I mean, if you're the amount of time, I only say this from a narrative, diagnosing the narrative.
I don't know,
here.
Dude. If you start like flying around and shit, and like, I don't think you're, you know what I mean? Like, you can't go back to just being...
What logic are you basing this on?
I don't know. Can I ask
the stenographer to read that back? You said, you know when you're flying around and shit? You know.
No, look,
end of statement.
No, I'm just saying that, like, if you turn into an evil robot, your hands are now blasters and your feet are like Astro Boy shoes.
Sick.
If you turn back into a human, wouldn't your arms be, like, melted and shit? Like, I don't think you can...
Why, you think just because a robot's bad, it can't do good stuff? That's the point.
No, I just think that, like, when you turn, I don't know if there's
you think you'd
back.
Have, like, floppy hands when you turn back.
Oh, my God.
Is that what you think?
Like, everybody has floppy hands, I think is what. Yeah.
And great fears, everybody. The X-Men saved everybody, and you're no longer robots, but you do have floppy hands.
Yeah, floppy hands.
That's bad news.
I think from a narrative point of view, they set up Trish so hard that I think there has to be some kind of beast finding her on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And reconnecting with her so that they can pay off
romance. Beast would love her with floppy hands and floppy feet?
he's already got floppy feet.
Yeah, he
loves
his
whole thing. That is his original mutant power, is he has the world's floppiest feet.
Oh, stop it.
Just to emphasize, for those of you who don't read the comics, Beast was originally a non-furry guy who was just good at climbing stuff.
He just had large feet. That was the whole thing.
That so crazy that they were like, let's design this super cool team of mutants? They were like, this guy has big feet.
He can jump up and he's very strong. Yeah. That was always part of it.
But it's also crazy. They were like, so here's two characters. One guy has big feet and the other guy has laser eye blasts that are stopped by ruby quartz lenses. He can't ever open his eyes, and his eyes are all, when they are open, they're always blasting all the time. It's like, put a little bit of that effort into the Beast character. No,
yeah, but then they're like, what, and there's Angel? A guy with wings. Yeah, yeah,
exactly. No. But that's like, his name is Angel. He's Warren Worthington III. He's very rich, but so he has a complex relationship with his family because he's also a mutant. Who's hated and feared, and over here this guy has large feet.
And let's give him glasses too. Okay.
Also, he says, "Oh my stars and garters," a normal thing human beings say.
That's what I call character development.
Nightcrawler said something to Gene I want to bring up to you guys. He said, "Blood is blood, family is a choice." How do you feel about that?
I back it.
Sure. Really? Well, interesting. Yeah. I was like, I mean, you can't really choose your family. You can choose if you want to stay a family, but like, you know.
No, but I think this gets into all of the things they've been digging down to, particularly this part, the LGBTQ plus metaphor of saying, which they hit very hard, like we mentioned earlier with Roberto and Jubilee, and those scenes in terms of his mom being like, yeah, totally accept you. I'm going to throw a benefit for Genosa, but when it's in my face, I feel viscerally uncomfortable and need to move back. In the same way, that's what Nightcrawler is saying to Jean, where he's like, obviously this is not your actual family, but this is the family that you've chosen for the people that you love, that you're comfortable with, that are like you. That is the choice that you've made. So even, I think it totally makes sense on that metaphorical level.
It's in the same way that we're a found family. Or at least we were until I injected both of you with a Justin organic virus.
Oh, no.
And made you my blood thralls. Blood, so we're both blood and family. Blood is blood.
Blood in, blood out is what I
exactly.
like to say.
Bloody, that's what I like to say. That's what we say right before we hit record on this podcast.
That's
day.
Right.
Well, just I'm surprised that was the moment you brought up with the Nightcrawler, because we got so many amazing Nightcrawler moments in this episode.
Well, the fight sequence and everything was just amazing. The teamwork with Wolverine and Nightcrawler was great. But, you know, I still had a few more questions before we got to the good stuff.
No, you missed Q&A. Q&A was at the beginning of the podcast. No more questions.
Well, you know, Justin was acting up, so I was having a hard time.
Acting up.
There was a fun scene where Mr. Sinister is just holding up beakers and like smiling in the glass. I know it's a cartoon.
And
but
when you
like,
say beakers, you mean like me, 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 right?
Yeah, exactly.
One in each hand. Great crossover. Hey, Disney, you know?
Yeah, crossover.
Well, and Pete, you bring up an interesting point, because what's Mr. Sinister doing here?
Yeah, exactly. That's my point.
He says what he's doing here. He's like, I can have all of these mutants to experiment on my dream.
But I mean, he's not being threatened. I guess this was like the Bastion episode, and maybe Bastion will be dispatched. But I do agree. This lends credence to, I think, your theory that there's another page to turn with Morph and Sinister. Because I also agree that Morph has been given a lot, and we don't know where that's going to end.
Yeah. Either. By the way, on that note, and I do want to get back to the Nightcrawler Wolverine stuff in a second, because it's the coolest part of the episode. But I don't think we're done with Bastion by any means. Like, definitely Magneto dispatches the Prime Sentinels here right at the end of the episode, but Bastion smiles when it happens. Like, he is too important of a character at this point and has too many plans to not have planned for Val Cooper releasing Magneto. Like, I think all of this is part of his plan, and we're going to see more of that in the next two episodes.
Well, and like, let's talk about Magneto and Val Cooper. Putting Val Cooper with Bastion, I thought, was an interesting choice. A character that traditionally is like generally a good person. And
is she, though?
It depends on who's handling. She's definitely very fungible and goes wherever. Yeah. But I'm thinking of her sort of prime usage was like X-Factor comics back in the day, when she was like leading the team, government liaison. And she was generally like, this is trying to do the right thing. And to put her there I was like, oh, that seems a little, especially when they're talking about real Dr. Mangala stuff. I was like, wow. And, you know, we see the number tattooed on Magneto's arm. They get heavy fast with that. So I was surprised that she was there.
While we're talking about Magneto, at what point when you guys leave, do you think to yourself, maybe I should put something else on other than underwear? You know what I mean? Like, how far outside your house?
I thought he was going to put on his classic Magneto suit. Like, I thought he was going to gallop.
Something on. Maybe a barrel. Playing,
but no.
Sometimes I get all the way to work and I'm still in my underwear.
Wow.
I usually get to, like, the North Pole and then I'm like,
yeah. Oh, Alex take a left. He's an explorer. He's a 19th century explorer.
Yes.
Trying to find the North
Can
Pole.
We talk about Wolverine and Nightcrawler? So two amazing things that happened in this scene. First of all, actually several amazing things that I want to call out. First of all, we got Wolverine falling through the air, doing the claw tornado thing, shredding the Prime Sentinels as he went.
That was so much fun.
Oh my God.
So I could watch that for 33 minutes.
That was amazing. Then we also got the amazing moment in the mansion where he's like, I got six reasons, and pops his claws, and Nightcrawler's like, no.
No, he doesn't say no. He goes, nine. And get it? 69. No,
I do get it. I get it. What?
69.
That's not.
Because Wolverine says six, and then Nightcrawler's like, ha, nine.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah, that's what he says. No, that's not what's happening. They have nine, and they have that amazing fight scene with Nightcrawler using three swords, one with his tail, Wolverine shredding them. And in the middle of this, we got something that I has never seen the entire time we've been reading.
What happens in between BAMPS?
Yes.
Yeah, that was crazy. Amazing.
Wolverine being like,
Wolverine was scared. Look, you don't ever see Wolverine looking scared like that, man. That was crazy.
Oh my God.
It was great.
So fantastic.
I love that. Just that whole fight sequence, just from the perspective shifting and everything that happened there, was one of the best just fight sequences I think we've seen coming out of any MCU project in quite some time. Just like really smart, really creative, really propulsive, never slowed down, not over complex. Just loved it.
It was a great ride there. Speaking of great rides.
Yeah.
Please tell me that Porsche was pre-established before all of a sudden it just appeared out of nowhere out of a plane.
I don't think it was, but I do think it was one of the cars from the X-Men movies, if I remember correctly. I'm probably getting this Easter egg a little wrong, but it's definitely like from something else X-Men that's popped up before. And also the license plate was SL1M, which is Slim, which is Cyclops' nickname. So that was very fun.
Crazy that the X-Men are like, we have to hide from society. I am getting vanity plates.
I am getting vanity plates on a very loud Porsche. Yeah, what's up? Not turning heads in this.
I also
love Westchester, so maybe you gotta hide in plain sight a little bit up there.
Line from Cyclops when the plane's blowing up, and he's like, I'm not doing this again. Very fun. Good stuff.
Yeah.
And the whole thing of them finally working together, going through the cave, Cyclops blasting the cave as they go, Cable shooting behind, Jean Grey driving the car with her telekinesis. Super cool. Everything.
That's family.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think that's the metaphor that we were talking about earlier. This is them being both a blood and found family simultaneously.
They've
been split up so
it's
hard.
It's called a found blood family,
I believe. Yeah. I love finding blood. I'm like, what am I going to do with this?
Particularly I just this into a baggie. I'm like, ooh, where'd you get that blood?
It was very Fast and Furious. All of a sudden, they're jumping planes out of a car, which is right from Fast and Furious. And then they're talking
jumping
about family.
Jumping planes out of a car? That's not happening.
Yeah, you're right. But all of a sudden, they're, you know, in the car talking about family. And I'm just like, come on, man. This is very Fast and Furious here. Come on.
But I think that, I don't know
it's
if
it's almost too fast.
I don't know if that was a purposeful reference. No.
I believe this podcast is Tokyo Drifting right now.
It has been for quite some time. Yeah. But what I'm trying to say is, like, this is a family that is technically blood related, but they're sort of, there's an asterisk next to all of them. So, like, to have that and have them come together in that fight, I thought was a great way to sort of simultaneously do something very badass and also pay off your metaphor in a really smart show don't tell way.
Well, and it also ties into Bastion's whole origin, which we haven't talked about as well, which I thought they did a really nice job of rejiggering for the show. So the way that I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's definitely some like gaps we need to fill in at this point, but there's this master mold code that was the culmination of every Sentinel, including Nimrod, that traveled back in time, infected a human man who, by the way, turns out to be a human man from X-Men, the animated series, who got together with a woman who was also a side character in X-Men, the animated series. And they had And yes, they were like, oh, Offset. Hey, like
a craft. Yeah, craft services. Crafty.
Oh, we all have the same idea. Anyway, so they have this. The son, Bastion, who essentially is a mutant. Like, he is a synthesis of man and machine, who is the culmination of all this machine code from forward in time, come back in time. But at the same time, like, he has the power to control machines. I'm sorry, I said time.
Stop saying time.
That's good. Time. Man, you're really being squeezed by time. I think he's a. I wrote down a mutated Sentinel.
Yeah,
and I think I believe in the comics it's a similar thing where it turns out he is a mutant in not in actual name but in theory, I guess. And so I think that's good. He as a way of saying like the hatred comes from something that he actually is.
Speaking of hatred, how many TVs do you think Wolverine goes through? You know what I mean? Like, if he doesn't like the news, he's going to put his claws through the screen. You know what I mean?
Somebody should give him a remote.
Before we move on from the Bastion origin thing, though, I did want to mention one thing that I thought was pretty great. His mother, when they visit her when she's older, is wearing a necklace. And the necklace is not actually shaped exactly the same way, but it is a little nod to the Siege Perilous, which was part of the origin story of Bastion in the comics, which frankly I'm glad they did not do it anyway, because it's way too complicated and it would have made this even more insane than it is. But if you take a look back, she's wearing very clearly a necklace, and it very clearly is like the same sort of inset gem as that thing from the comics.
Which I thought it was the Titanic necklace at first. First off, this is why I couldn't be a superhero. You go into a house expecting like an evil lair, and there's just a creepy old lady there. I would have left. I'd be like, nope.
But you love doing this. Older women.
The way that that's worded, I have a problem with.
Yeah, sorry, it's a MILF hunter.
No. Oh, my God.
Great. Wow, it's very hard to follow up with what you just said, what I was going to say, which is I thought also that the way in the Bastion origin they hit on some real anti-immigrant rhetoric in the way they did that with, like, a construction workers getting fired because mutants are taking their jobs. I thought that was – I was surprised because it's so different from the other sort of ideas they're dealing with in the episode. But, like, man, that struck how present tense that saying that is.
Well,
maybe
I'm getting the term wrong, but I believe that's called replacement theory, which is exactly what he's talking about. And it's pretty racist, but it's something that a lot of people believe. And that's one of the big things that this show, like we've been talking about all episode long, is doing so well – is touching on some real big real world stuff in a way that none of the rest of the Marvel stuff has done in any cohesive manner. So it
hasn't even attempted really. Yes. It's been anything they've done that tries to speak to the moment, I feel like has just landed really flatly. And this just goes hard and has a point of view. Mm-hmm. And it's wild that this is the one show like firmly set in the past. And they're also the only show they can talk about today, because also, when the Sentinels switched to PR mode, I thought that was such a surprising turn. And they're just like, this is on the heels of the Roberto moment. And it sort of happens to all of them. I thought that was also really smart and so insidious how our modern politics works a lot as well.
Something I thought that was super smart is this show answers a question a lot of people have been asking, and that's who let the dogs out. And Bastion was like, you know, he made that clear. He's like, who let the dog out? And so now we know.
What?
Definitively.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, did a plane just come out of your car? What are you talking about?
Magneto, Bastion called him the dog.
Mm, okay.
And then he was like, who let the dog out?
Yeah, I don't. I don't think that was a lie to
the
episode.
No, he said that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess I'll have to go back and watch. Any other moments from the episode that you guys want to call out in particular?
Not. I mean, the fact that the robots had toad tongues, I thought was strange, but cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's just leading into the whole horror aspect of it, which we got in the Bastion Mom scene. We got with Trask in the previous episode. So I like it. It's creepy. Yeah. It's weird. I think we're going to get more of it. We'll see where it goes.
Also funny that Bastion updated the Sentinels' super fresh technology. Didn't update the dialogue very much for their the vibe's the same.
I mean, I don't think Jubilee paid for that outfit that she ran out of the mall with. You know what I mean?
Is that her vampire outfit from the comics?
Ooh, interesting.
I don't think so.
I don't know.
Just for anybody listening who doesn't know what I'm talking about, Jubilee, a pretty simple character that's very straightforward. They overcomplicated her at some point to make her a vampire, and then she adopted a baby and became a vampire mom while also being a mutant. So lots of stuff going on with her. She definitely got that black costume under her coat at some point. I thought it was when she became a vampire, but I could be wrong.
I liked Vampire Jubilee.
Yeah. I don't know. Keep Jubilee simple. That's my presidential campaign for this year. Anything else before we move on? Pete, going once, going twice?
Magneto was right line was kind of a crazy powerful line there.
Yeah, I'm interested to see where we end up in the show. I think we've talked about this on the podcast before, but I pretty firmly believe that in the real world, there's a good argument to be made that Magneto is right, just in terms of how our politics are aligned with everybody and the way that we talk about everything in terms of conflict. In the comic books, I think we're supposed to believe in the dream of Xavier, and Magneto is not right about what he's talking about ultimately. I'm curious to see where this show falls out at the end of the day.
Also, one
I think
more.
We should return to our vision board real quick.
Wait. You know what I mean? One more.
Pete's definitely going to say several more things.
No, just one more. I think Wolverine's psychic, you know what I mean? Because, you know, he was like, oh, man, too bad Professor isn't here. And Professor immediately showed up, you know what I mean? Speak of the devil, he shall appear.
There you go. That was, can we just mention a ridiculous moment, like him showing up in the bug costume? How do you look around at that, at the burnt remains of your mansion, Wolverine costume tour?
Am I too late?
Yes.
Did I miss it?
Yes, you did.
I think it was pretty clear you missed it from your entry, but all right.
Totally. Come on, man.
Come on.
It should be. What are we going to turn to the vision board where we look at what's coming forward, what we think is coming forward? Justin, take it away.
Well, I mean, I think the Magneto was right is huge. I think the sort of politics of it is really interesting. But Professor X is back. So how are we going to clock this? How are we going to explore this? Sort of whose side is it? Scott, who becomes the like fulcrum here, who has to sort of choose between the two daddies, because it's going to be hard for Professor X to be super right when he shows up deeply late, like Gambit's corpse late to the party, you know.
But the thing that's nice about him showing up is now Storm's going to be back on the team.
She's going to be back on the team. That is nice. Do you think we're going to get some variation on a lot of the things that we've been talking about here? Some sort of schism type thing where some of the team is going to go with Magneto. Probably Rogue is going to go with Magneto, almost certainly.
Don't say
that. Not to kiss him, but like, this is the more extreme X-Men team who's going to take action versus Xavier, who's been gone this entire time, I think is going to be more on the side of like, no, we must be the X-Men and uplifting humanity. And a lot of folks, maybe not even Cyclops, are going to necessarily believe that anymore. So I think we're going to get almost like, I don't know, I wouldn't be surprised.
You think Cyclops, who just said this episode he's the greatest father ever, is just going to peace?
Except he's changed. Cyclops has changed over the course of the season. And I could see a world.
He said it this episode.
Yeah. He's...
That's what you call a setup, my guy.
Yes, absolutely. I could see the last episode, that final shot of the opening credits where the two teams are running at each other. It's not the bad mutants or the good mutants. Oh, it's half the X-Men of each side running at each other.
That's a great call. Because I'll tell you another indication there, we didn't mention, we see Asteroid M in the top of this episode. Mm-hmm.
The Blackbird flying out of Asteroid M. So yeah, I think we're going to get a team based out of there. I also do wonder, because Bodimeo said to read, and this is something we were talking about in the previous episode, to read an issue of Fatal Attractions before next episode. It's not the one where Wolverine gets his skeleton ripped out, but I still kind of think maybe we're heading towards that.
Agree. I was just going to say that. Like, I feel like that's, we talked about this last episode, the Wolverine being on the fringes, just acting out. And not get, we
acting
didn't
out.
Get into.
He's the best member of the team. What the fuck are you talking about?
I'm saying he's just literally like slashing monitors, being a badass, of course, but he hasn't had any character development when he is like a central character.
It's not his fault. Scott's a drama queen and taking all the focus
all
the time.
I'm not criticizing Wolverine.
It seems like that's exactly what you're doing, bro.
I'm literally saying I feel like we're due for a major Wolverine move going forward, and I feel like. What's bigger in anyone's life than getting your skeleton ripped out of your body?
Can you top that?
Yeah.
That's like an adamantium bar mitzvah.
He's going to be floppy all over the place.
Floppy hands.
Yeah. Cool. There you go. There's our vision board. I guess we'll see what happens. Onslaught, Age of Apocalypse, all coming as well, I'm sure. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about X-Men 97. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, stay marvelous.
Floppy hands, floppy hands. That's who you were thinking, Pete. I knew you were thinking that.